It's Good Show's Raptors Rerun on the Sportsnet Podcast Network. I'm JD Bunkus. He is Ben Ennis. And we are in the meat of it. It's Raptors Bucks time. And I got to say, before we get things started, imagine the NBA playoffs were like this, where you got a game every single night.
Yeah. I think Kawhi Leonard would have expired.
Yeah.
Perhaps he would have been done.
Like, yeah.
Both legs would have been amputated by this point in the postseason. But yeah, it sure would have been entertaining.
Dude, I don't know how our listeners are. I know that some of you are way behind. Some of you are following along, as is. Some of you are probably here right now because Raptors Game 7 was the biggest one. And thanks again for everybody who shared the podcast this week. Or I shouldn't say this week. God, every day. Every single day we're doing these things. And I'm not... listen, who am I to say how we should program these things? But knowing what we know now about the world of sports, do you think that the networks maybe wish they aired these things closer to reality than every single night?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. When I think we set out to do this podcast, we're like, all right, so that'll take us. I mean, hopefully sports aren't quite back by the end of it. And then like we end it and maybe there's a week lag time before sports are back. It's like, oh, no, we're going to finish this thing. And then we're maybe going to discuss another rerun that we're going to do.
We're definitely we're going to be doing the it's another edition of Raptors Rerun, the rerun, as we look back on the takes we had poorly from a couple weeks ago. We're going to start with the Magic. Like, I wonder what the content plan is going to look like in a couple of weeks. But
well,
now,
it's let's go back and do Toronto Maple Leafs 1967 Stanley Cup final rerun. I don't know what the takes were at the time, but let's hammer some old broadcasters, old journalists.
Oh, that would be so great. Just all the takes, all the hot takes. Like, oh, another goalie dove out of the crease at the sign of a slap shot.
Actually, I got a good one. They called them the Over the Hill Bunch. Yeah, bad take. These guys weren't over the hill. They were in their prime.
They were right in the middle of the hill. I like it. I like it. All right, so stay tuned for the 1967 Toronto Maple Leafs rerun podcast at the conclusion of this thing. And yeah, we're turning the corner, man. We're into the Bucks series. Obviously, the setup for this one is pretty simple to me. The anxiety level, Raptors' anxiety level drops a little bit because it's not a game seven. There's not the same urgency. Raptors fans are much, much happier because, again, there's true belief that Kawhi Leonard might stay with the Toronto Raptors. And now, a guy who's averaging almost 32 points a game is heading in to play Giannis Antetokounmpo, the league's MVP, and there's real buzz about, well, hey, what if Kawhi had played the full 82 games in this regular season? What if he had treated the regular season like Giannis Antetokounmpo did and went balls to the wall every night? Are we so sure that Giannis would be MVP? This is really where the Kawhi is the best player on the planet buzz starts, and he gets the opportunity to prove it against Giannis. And if you remember, the season series, the Bucks won it 3-1, but one of those games, the Bucks came off of, the Bucks didn't play Giannis and the Raptors didn't play Leonard. But one of the most impressive wins they had that season was a game where Siakam and Leonard each dropped 30 and they beat them. And so this was we're really not sure what each team is. The Raptors are so different. The Raptors have had this incredible performance against the Bucks in the regular season. And these are two seemingly even matched teams. The Raptors facing a coach who they originally wanted to hire, Malcolm Brogdon coming back in game five for the Celtics and ready to play a major role in this thing. The mayor, a guy who was rookie of the year just a couple of seasons ago. This was, I think, the way it was meant to be. These were the two best teams in the Eastern Conference this year with the two best players. Do you agree or do you disagree? Do you think the Sixers should have been there?
No. They had the top two records in the Eastern Conference. I think that's bang on. And who knows? I mean, maybe the Raptors do end up having the best record in the Eastern Conference if Kawhi plays the whole season. I know their record without him was stupid good. Mm-hmm. Could have been even better with him. But yeah, he treated it as 60 practices, which worked out rather well. But yeah, I don't know. Anxiety level, what did we say the minimum you can have in a playoff game is? I think you said 7. I still think it's like 5 because Bucks were sitting there. They were home and cooled out, beating the Celtics in 5 games. They were the best team in the Eastern Conference. The Raptors go through a 7-game war against the Philadelphia 76ers, and we talked about it in the Game 7 pod. They're playing with house money to a degree at this point. They're underdogs in the series, Bucks are the best team in the East, and it's game one. So they always lose game one. So, and they did again.
They're slight underdogs, though. They're slight underdogs. I looked at the way most pros picked this series before we started, and it was pretty split between Raptors in seven and Bucks in six or seven. I didn't really see too many people who had Raptors in six.
Yeah. That's fine, but it's not like you're overwhelming favorites, and it's an abject disaster if you lose this series, especially if it's a deep one. Like that's you got the guy that's about to be named the MVP and the team with the best record in the NBA. And you don't have home court advantage. And it again, game ones. They end up losing this game to drop to 3-15 all time in game one. So you didn't think the series was over even if they lost game one, which they did.
Man, the Raptors in game ones. The only thing that we'll get to is how it was a different Lowry in this game one. So story of the game to me is simple. The Raptors blow it and Brook Lopez steals it.
Yep. Brook Lopez was insanely good. And the story going into this series was that Brook Lopez had not shot the three overly well in the playoffs to this point. He ends up 4 of 11 from three in this game. The fourth quarter was just insane, though. Non-Kyle Lowry shooters in that fourth quarter, 0 of 15. Raps had a 7-point lead going into the final 12 minutes. They handed it away, but Brook Lopez was a man possessed.
It's a tough game to watch because there are lengthy stretches where you can't believe the Raptors lose this game. Like they're winning by somewhere between 10 and 6 points basically until the fourth quarter and a couple of minutes in while it's the Kawhi Leonard sit period. Lowry's red hot. It's the best Lowry game of the playoffs up until this point. He's 7 of 9 from 3. He scores 30 points, he gets 8 rebounds. He's absolutely possessed in this game. He starts early, he gets his offense going. The beginning of the game, Pascal Siakam is actually contributing. He looks like, hey, all that stuff about the series before against the Sixers, he's figured this thing out. They're doing a reasonably good job at slowing down Giannis Antetokounmpo. They go on a first quarter run of 16-0 where they start 5 of 8 from 3, and every single Raptor gets involved early. And Kawhi at the end of the first half has 13 points, and you're kind of like, all right, like that's a solid Leonard performance, but he hasn't had to carry you guys. Even Serge Ibaka gives them a couple early buckets, and just Milwaukee's ice cold in this game, except for Brook Lopez. And that's why he's the story of the game, is because he saves them multiple times and then he wins it for them. He's playing incredible defense. He's protecting the rims. He's blocking shots. He's getting on the glass. His first few baskets are all like, hey, I'm just going to get an offensive rebound against Marc Gasol and I'm going to get some pushbacks. He has some weird finishes. Do you remember the first drive he scores in this game?
Yes.
He's like completely off balance, stepping to the basket with his left hand. It looks like he travels, but it's just because he's so long for where he comes from and he kisses it off the glass. He hits monster threes in this game. And I know he misses a bunch and the percentage doesn't end up as so great, but he has the game-winning three. He has the big two fourth quarter threes right at the beginning that completely tilt the way that this game is. He gets stops on the defensive end. He's brilliant in this game. He's basically the attitude for them where everything seems to be going wrong for the Bucks, and guys don't really seem to be playing with a ton of confidence. And Brook Lopez keeps just screaming at the Raptors after he makes shots and really seems to fire up the bench and allows them to steal it down the stretch. But Raps should have had this one, man. Like,
yeah.
It's a painful, painful loss the way that Kyle Lowry played. And sneakily, Kawhi Leonard has 31 points and 9 rebounds and 3 steals. And I don't think he played particularly well.
No, he wasn't good. No, he was 10 of 26, man. He was horrible. He had 2 points in the fourth
horrible
quarter.
Horrible is strong. Horrible is very strong. I don't know if he could score 30 points to be horrible. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can. He wasn't horrible, but yeah, you can definitely score 30 points to be horrible. But no, he wasn't horrible. Let's just say not good. Like 10 of 26, in what world is that good? And well, yeah, he made 10 free throws, I get it, and he was still playing his stout defense. They don't have him hard matched against Giannis yet. That's coming later in the series. But yeah, he, in the fourth quarter, has 2 points. They're both at the line. Siakam is the only other point that the Raptors had in the fourth quarter that was non-Kyle Lowry. Everybody's missing. And this is coming off that Game 7 performance where he has the great finish to the fourth quarter, but in an overall sense, he was throwing up a ton of shots and not doing the same great shooting percentage things he had done for the previous, what, 10 games of the postseason. So now it's two games in a row where the shooting percentage isn't what we're used to from Kawhi.
Yeah, it's just funny that Kawhi ends up in this game with more points than Kyle Lowry. It's like, yeah. You look at it, and I get it. Again, you mentioned he gets to the free throw line.
11 more shots.
Yep, of course. It's just funny to look at the box score and think, wow, Kyle Lowry was amazing in this game, and then Kawhi ends up with more points. But yeah, it's the fourth quarter is the story for Kawhi, is that he's totally fine through the vast majority of this contest. And I mean that when I say fine, he's not overwhelmingly great like we're used to. He comes up with a lot of, drawn fouls. He hits a few baskets. He can't hit anything from three in this game. He's really seems to be struggling when Malcolm Brogdon is guarding him. He has to take tough shots almost every time he's making an attempt. There's a few moments where I think he plays a little too selfishly, where he's not moving the basketball and he's struggling to make his own shot. But the fourth quarter, he doesn't score until the 3:30 mark and their free throws. And then when they go down the stretch and they need a couple of baskets and they draw up some plays for him at a timeouts, he can't come up with anything. So I would say that the most infuriating thing about this game was I was reminded that Brook Lopez won the Bucks this game. This is the take. He stole it for them. He led them. He hit the big shots. He made the big defensive plays. He made the big rebounds. All of those things are true. But do you remember how the Bucks got him?
From the Lakers, right?
They signed him after he just sat out on the free agent market. No one signed him. No one did anything. And he ends up taking a $3.4 million deal because the Lakers don't want him to return. And The Lakers that season decided, instead of Brook Lopez, they wanted to go with JaVale McGee for almost the exact same amount of money. That was their plan at center. They're like, we don't need Brook Lopez. We're fine. We have JaVale McGee that we're going to bring in, basically an all-time bozo. And Brook Lopez looks exactly like the New Jersey Nets version or I guess he was Brooklyn Nets. He wasn't New Jersey Nets. I never remember when exactly that franchise made that pivot point.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but he just looks like vintage Brook Lopez in this game, doing just about everything, scoring everywhere, playing good defense, knocking down threes. And you're reminded that when the Gasol trade was made, Gasol had hit the second most threes for a 7-footer in the NBA over the last 5 seasons. And the only guy who had hit more of them was Brook Lopez. And he feels immensely dangerous in this game. So where the game was won to me is 2 minutes, 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Raptors are up 1 with the ball. Danny Green is just over dribbling at the top of the 3-point line. Again, Danny Green not really holding up very well in this playoff run. Defensively fine, but offensively, the dribbling and the cutting and the finishing around the basket is just it's a non-factor. But he over dribbles. Middleton picks him off, gives it to Lopez, who finishes in transition. They take the lead back. Then Leonard comes down and just hoists a three, misses it. Giannis gets it. Drives down, kicks it to Lopez. Lopez hits that three. Raptors timeout. They're down 4, 2 minutes to play. And they don't score again. The Raptors don't score another point in this game.
No, it's a 10-0 run to wrap up the game. And then Kawhi with another turnover after that to Lopez. It's a nightmare at that point. That's clearly – it's the fourth quarter where they lose it. But sure, if you want to be specific, that's the moment where it's all said and done.
Obviously, our favorite moments are Lowry. And so that's why I saved discussing him in further detail here, right?
I have one that's not Lowry, but yeah.
Oh, really?
I have. So
okay,
yeah.
Okay, you go first then.
Okay, I'll do my non-Lowry ones. So there are actually two Kawhi moments. So one is in the first quarter where he tries a jumper and it takes like 75 bounces on the rim again and goes out. And I was watching the U.S. broadcast feed. So I was watching the TNT thing and Marv is talking about how Sixers fans watching this right now are wondering why that couldn't have happened in Game 7. And you could have a chuckle as a Raptor fan. But later on in the game, in the third quarter, he has another one where it's a three-bouncer and goes in. And you're like, well, this guy's just, like, he's made of magic. Like, this is obviously his thing that he's capable of doing, melding the rims to whatever his liking is so the basketball can go through the mesh.
My favorite moment is just simply almost everything to do with Kyle Lowry, but my favorite one is his fourth three of the game. He's had this up and down offensive playoffs, one that in game one against Orlando really drew way, way, way too much ire just from the standpoint of what Kyle Lowry has done in his career. Again, if you go back the last couple of seasons, Kyle Lowry has been really, really good in the playoffs. Go look at his game logs. Go look at the way that he played against the Cavaliers before he got hurt. Go look at the way that he played against the Wizards. It's just, you can go look at the way that he carried them to a victory in a 7-game series against the Miami Heat. where he scores 36 points in a game seven. Kyle Lowry has had incredible playoff performances. They've been uneven at times, and I think that's the way that you would describe this playoff run. But in a series against Philly, a team that he normally relishes playing against, he has a few good games, but he really is not a huge factor in game seven when the Raptors win. And in game one, he tries to put the team on his shoulders. And it actually reminded me a little bit of, do you remember the Raptors' first regular season game this year, the 2019-2020 season, where the Raptors were getting blown out by the Bucks, and Kyle Lowry just said, no, we're not getting blown out tonight. I'm going to carry us back into this game. The Raptors also eventually lost that game, but it's because Lowry is brilliant. So his 4-3, he drives baseline, he drops it off to Gasol, and then he just immediately sprints to the three-point line, and Gasol gives it back to him, and he's probably 3 to 4 feet behind the line. He just catches the return pass, steps into it, and bangs it, and restores a Raptors 8-point lead. And I'll admit, again, I had kind of forgotten how hot Lowry was in this game and how this thing played out, because you see the final score, and I remembered Brook Lopez. I was vividly remembering that the Raptors blew this game and that Brook Lopez had caught fire, and you really felt like this was a missed opportunity for this team. But I forgot that he hit 7 threes in this thing. And they're all just like, it was a couple of years ago where Kyle Lowry added this 3-ball, and there were the stats about how he's actually just as good going to his left side and picking it up off the dribble from the above the break step into off the bounce three as Steph Curry, or that their percentages were very, very close. And yeah, this is Kyle Lowry showing off a skill set that has allowed him to strongly helped him remain an all-star, not just a good point guard. Basically the difference, I think of Kyle and Eric Bledsoe very similarly. Like when I watch these games, I always think of Eric Bledsoe reminds me of Kyle Lowry. He's an undersized guy. He's obviously a lot more jacked than Kyle Lowry, but both of them play incredibly strong nose defense. Both of them like to get to the basket. They can finish through contact. They've never been afraid of doing that. They both play with that bulldog mentality. They both play with a chip on their shoulder. The difference is that Kyle Lowry added that three off the dribble in his career. Eric Bledsoe never has. And it actually comes back to bite Milwaukee later in the series. But if you want to look at why Kyle Lowry has had the staying power that he's had, why he's been an elite point guard in the NBA, it's because he's got that shot. He's got that deadly pull-into shot that when he gets it going, he becomes very, very difficult to stop, especially when you add his intelligence in. So yeah, my favorite moment is just Kyle Lowry in this game.
Yeah, and that's a great sequence, and I distinctly remember that deep three. But yeah, in the fourth quarter, there's two in a row that he hits. The one gives the Raptors the lead again. It's 96-94, and he's 6 of 7 from three. You're like, this can't be sustainable. Like, this can't continue. He ends up going to the line shortly after that. He splits the pair of free throws, and then the next possession, Siakam kicks it to Kyle, and he hits another one. They're down three. And he ties the game up at 98, and he's 7 of 8 from three. Of course, he finishes 7 of 9, so he only misses one more the rest of the way. But it was just so mind-bending that the guy was having that type of a shooting game, and it was meaning so much at the time, and he might steal the game for the Raptors. Unfortunately, nobody else could hit a shot.
So the take that age is poorly from this game, I'm actually going to go back to the deadline, because there's another Gasol take that emerges, but it's the following contest, so I'm not going to rush it and put it here. But the take that ages poorly from this one is, this is the only real moment in the series, unless you argue game two, where this take continued to live before it died, which was the Bucks won the trade deadline. They got the crown jewel of the trade deadline, and the Raptors were runners up who paid a harsher premium. Nikolai Mirotic got acquired by the Milwaukee Bucks on trade deadline day before Marc Gasol was dealt to the Raptors for four second-round picks, Stanley Johnson and Jason Smith. So essentially two throw-ins and four second-round picks. And I remember my reaction at the time was, holy crap, Masai needs to step it up because Mirotic is having this really, really good season. They've got to figure out a way to counter that. They go out and get Marc Gasol. And yes, some people, like you and I specifically, because our show was on live at that time, were thrilled and thought the Raptors got the best player. So this is actually not a take that aged poorly for us. We were always on the right side of history. So quick, brief moment for a congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you. I mean, we don't have
to me as well, please.
Yeah, congrats to you. I was just going to say, do we want to throw dirt on Donovan Bennett?
Oh, yeah, of course we do. Ooh, that's what I'm saying.
You missed JV. He's like, JV. No, not JV, though. Yeah. We're like, goodbye, JV. Hello. One of the best passing big men and three-point shooting big men in the NBA. That's going to work out. And, defensive player of the year.
So in his defense, And again, no one didn't think Mirotić wasn't a good player, because he absolutely was. The season that he was having that year, he was shooting 37% from three, almost 17 points a game with 8 rebounds and an assist on 29 minutes. So Mirotić was having this really, really good season. And Marc Gasol was starting the year hot, but then was dealing with lower body injuries. And there was a lot of buzz of, what can Gasol do for you? What's he going to be able to provide? And yeah, the poor take people like Donovan, who was so, so wrong in this thing. And the clip's up on YouTube. And I actually remember watching it after the Raptors won the playoffs, because I was going to clip something for him when Gasol was so incredible in the Sixers series. But he just thought that he was washed up, that Jonas Valanciunas was better in his own right still at that point in his career. just that Nikolai Mirotić was the better player and that he fit what the Raptors needed to do with the spacing. And despite the fact that, again, they're non-comparable defensive players. But in this one, Mirotić has moments, right? Like, he hits a couple of big shots. He gets a couple of offensive rebounds. He actually gets fouled by Gasol a couple of times. Gasol is sort of struggling underneath. And yeah, so everyone at the deadline that had the Bucks won it, Bucks paid a lesser price for a better player. Sorry, but history did not really look kindly on you.
Yeah. It was also a bad take if you thought that, yeah, the long, like, that was, you needed to have that win if you're the Raptors, which, felt like it in the time, man. Like, you wanted to steal one on the road, and of course, game two is not competitive, but that was it. It was right there, 7-point lead going into the fourth quarter, plus you're maybe catching a team that's a little sleepy after all that time off, beating the Celtics in 5 games. And that also, again, I was watching the TNT feed, Reggie Miller's talking about the longer this series goes, going to favor the team that's more rested. Like, the Raptors, and Kawhi plays a million minutes in game three in overtime, and no, the Raptors end up winning the series despite the fact that they're playing way more basketball than the Bucks.
Yeah, I just don't hammer anybody that has the take of that's the series in the moment, because I don't think that's anyone serious. No one ever says after game one that's the series, no matter how you lose. And I don't fault fans who say that, because it feels like everything is so important in a playoffs, and especially when you blow one like the Raptors, again, unequivocally did in this game. Everyone scores in the first quarter. They go on a 16-0 run. Siakam looks good. Green hits a three. Lowry's red hot. They do a good job containing. Again, you do not stop Giannis Antetokounmpo, but they do a great job of containing him and Chris Middleton. Look at their stats at the end of this game. Like, Middleton is essentially a non-factor in this contest. There's only a couple of moments where you notice him. He hits 1-3. He's a three-point shooter. That's his primary function. He scores 11 freaking points in this game. Eric Bledsoe, their star point guard, who they extend, is 0-6 from three in this game. If I showed you Bledsoe and Middleton are playing this game, and the two of them are 1-12, and Giannis Antetokounmpo only has 24 points, and then I offered you, how much money would you like to bet the Raptors win this game? By the way, Kyle Lowry has 30 points, and so does Kawhi Leonard. You would look at me and say, you would call your wife and tell her, listen, we're putting the house up for sale, everything we're doing. How much can you get for gambling children? That's what you'd be appraising your two boys. So I don't blame Raptors fans who got upset with that. And I don't blame people who thought that was a huge lost opportunity, because it absolutely was. Is there a story or is there a story we missed, or is there a player that was underrated in this thing?
I mean, you mentioned Malcolm Brogdon, but this is, I mean, he's coming off the bench here. He's 5-9 and 3-6 from three. He looks so good. And they're going to regret letting him walk. I know the record was good before the season shut down, but yeah, that guy's a player. And this is the beginning. It's Norm against the Bucks, right? Like, Norm actually hit some shots. He goes 2-4 from three. I think both are in the first half, but still, it's like Norm just sees those uniforms. He goes into that building and he's an assassin.
I have underrated player as Malcolm Brogdon, because they don't really get very many contributions from a lot of players in this game, and he's awesome. And he does it on both ends of the floor. And he had missed a month with, or actually, sorry, 2 months he had missed with plantar fasciitis. I never know if it's plantar fasciitis or plantar fascia.
No, it's the first one, not the second.
Okay, yeah, I always screw that thing up. It's one of those things that I can never feel confident.
Never had it.
Yeah, I never, thank goodness, man. It sounds
horrible. I've had it. It's brutal. It's brutal, brutal, brutal. You can't walk.
Yeah, I don't want to ever know that pain. I don't want to know foot pain. I've had a sliver before in my foot.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Yeah. I actually think the underrated story from this game is it's not a very good nurse performance. How do you feel about that?
Interesting.
So
what would you have had him do?
here's the case against why it's not a very good Nurse game. First of all, they never should have started Pascal Siakam on Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I mentioned that they do a reasonable job on Giannis, but a lot of that is because they're sending help his way and keeping it's Marc Gasol at the rim that's giving him problems. But the possessions where Pascal Siakam is just defending him, those are the possessions where Giannis Antetokounmpo eats. And he should have had more information going into this game, because here's the thing. I looked it up. Siakam in the three regular season games playing Giannis Antetokounmpo, he defended him for 93 possessions, and Giannis had 41 points and 5 assists. He was 15 to 27. So it's a reasonable job, right? But Kawhi Leonard in those three games, he defended him for 31 possessions. How many points do you think Antetokounmpo had in 31 possessions against Kawhi Leonard?
None. He had minus 10 points.
He had 4 points. Yeah. He had 4 freaking points. He did pretty well against Ibaka. And you know who else had done actually a pretty decent job that you were expecting to be in the series, or what you were hoping for, was OG Anunoby. And before this series starts, you're reminded that OG was traveling with the team at this point, and yeah, people were still hopeful that he was going to show up in this series. I think that the game plan from the very beginning should have been put Kawhi on Giannis Antetokounmpo. That should have been something that happened basically right out of the gate. And I just think that Danny Green played too much in this game. He plays 35 minutes. You actually saw a flash from Norm Powell, and you only play him 10. I just don't understand why the minutes were the way that they were for Powell versus Danny Green, when this is the weird thing about this series to me and about the playoffs in general so far, is you like Danny Green's defense. He's a smart defender, and he forces defenses to respect him. But Norm Powell hits 2 threes in this game. Danny Green hits the one. What is Danny Green doing for you in this game? He can't put the ball on the deck. He's not somebody who's killing other teams from three at this point throughout the playoffs. He's playing good defense, but it's relatively close to, I think, what Norm Powell can provide you. I would say, let's say out of 100, Norm Powell is giving you 87% of what Danny Green is giving you. There's just a stretch there where the Raptors really could have used a secondary ball handler, where the offense gets really tight in the fourth quarter, and they should have maybe given Norm Powell a look here. And it's too much Pascal Siakam again. It's just he doesn't have it figured out. He's shooting way too many corner threes, and they're drawing it up for him to be this way. It's a little bit too much Kawhi Leonard in isolation when Kyle Lowry's this hot. And yeah, it's not a pretty performance down the stretch. And I still do put that on coaching, because some of these things that happen out of timeouts are just, they're completely washed away from the Bucks, and they don't score for 2 minutes in the final game. It's just their final quarter. It's not a great Nurse performance. I think it's sneaky underrated that some of the strategy that he employed was not great.
Sure, and he adjusts in the series, right? Like, yep. Yeah, Kawhi eventually ends up on Giannis. But you understand the thought process and not putting Kawhi on Giannis from the get-go. Like, he's playing him 42 minutes. Like, there's a couple of points in this game where you're like, ooh, Kawhi does look gassed. One time he comes up short, he gets his own miss, though, and puts the board back. But yeah, you're asking him to play 42 minutes and guard the MVP for the entirety of the game. That's a big ask.
Asking Kawhi Leonard to guard Chris Middleton, who is an all-star this season. So I don't see it as...
Yeah, but he's not a 7-foot
obviously,
monster who's driving him into the earth, you know, underneath the bucket.
Don't think Siakam should have started the game on him. And yeah, you're trying. I just don't think that you can try to conserve energy of guys or try to play it that way or try to get tricky. You always give different looks, but he also gives Giannis a lot of rest in these games. It's basically, it's what ends up coming back to haunt him. But knowing that strategy of, hey, Giannis is going to have real significant minutes here where he sits on the bench and he's watching this game. Those are the times you find rest for your superstar. It just, again, it's an underrated storyline. I don't think it's the story of the game. I just didn't really like Nurse in this one. That's it for me, though. I think the take I wish I had, or did I nail it, was, yeah, this I nailed this game. It's the game, if the Raptors had lost the series, you would have looked back on with the most regret.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because you just needed to take one. You just needed to do what the Sixers did in Toronto in that game two, is just escape with one of these things. And you've got all the momentum going back home with the best player in the series, despite Giannis getting the MVP. And it was right there. It was right in front of them, up 7 to start the fourth quarter, and just absolutely blew it. 0-15 from non-Lowry in the fourth quarter. But yeah, it was all good.
Notable omissions. I only have really one, which is that Fred VanVleet still can't hit. It's just, it's, he goes 1-4 and he goes 0-2 from three. And both of those looks are pretty clean. And he's just, he's not able to knock them down. He's a minus 10. And it's just, it's not the Fred VanVleet is ready to turn the corner for your franchise just quite yet. There's also, they really need, everyone talks a lot about Marc Gasol in the Sixers series. And I don't think that he gets nearly enough discussion in this one. Like, Serge Ibaka is minus 17 while he's on the floor in this game when Gasol goes off. And when does that run start? It starts in the fourth quarter when both Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol are both sitting on the bench. And both of those guys are the Raptors' two most important defenders in this game. And yeah, if you're looking at where was a what do they call it? The Sportsnet game changer. That's the way that they branded here. I think that the 2 minutes at the beginning of the fourth quarter when the Raptors have made that, they've re-cushioned that lead because Siakam comes up with that really monster three-point shot that's right at the buzzer beater, that you're kind of looking at it and saying, man, you sort of wish that at least one of those two guys was on the floor for that stretch, because that's kind of when Brook gets going and that's when Giannis gets inside and scores and forces guys to step back in early.
Yeah. I don't really have any other than like just another Bledsoe note at the beginning of the fourth quarter when Brook Lopez is so stupid hot from three, makes another three, cuts it to 183-82, and Bledsoe just looks him off. He's wide open. He's like, give me the ball. My hand is aflame. Bledsoe's like, nah, it's my time here. And he just clangs it, ends up 0-6 from three in this game. But other than that, yeah.
Though, in Bledsoe's defense, it's the third quarter. He gets hot for a little stretch where he gets a steal and he scores 7 straight points and he's responsible for 9 straight points. And it's one of those spots where the Bucks completely close the gap and the Raptors have to build it back up. But it's a really big swing point in the game. Yeah, third quarter where they start that half. He gets he picks a steal. He gets to the basket. He knocks down a shot. He gets an N1. He finds Giannis in transition. It's a bad game for him, but he does have a moment in it.
Yeah, he did. That's right, going to the rim. Not a great shooting night, though, I would
say.
Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, Eric Bledsoe, still one of the Raptors fan base's favorite players.
For sure.
All right. Well, you can leave a review. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on, I think you can subscribe on Google. I've never really done it like that. I should know that thing better. But you can always share it on Twitter. You can always shoot a retweet. You can always tell a friend. And you can always reach out to us. We love hearing from those of you that are following along, and especially when you're watching these games live. We'll catch you tomorrow night.
Yeah, see ya.